Welcome to Whiskey Cask, Cask Strength Conversation, featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie. This is episode number 454 for December 2nd, 2013. Coming up in a few minutes.
People say it's a bit of an oddball distillery because of the way that we do things, but the whiskey that comes, what we make here, is fantastic.
Speyside's Mortlach Distillery in Dufton produces whiskey that's prized by blenders and rarely available as a single malt until now. Diageo is investing millions to make Mortlach the next major single malt Scotch whiskey brand, including an expansion that will essentially duplicate this unique distillery. Distillery managers Steve McGonigal and Sean Phillips will take us on a tour of Mortlach, and we'll hear about the process of creating the four new Mortlach single malts to be released next summer from Diageo blender Matthew Crow during Whiskey Cast In Depth. I'll also have the calendar of events, this week's Your Voice, and in the What I'm Tasting This Week department, guess some of the new Mortlachs. All on this week's Whiskey Cast.
Whiskey Cast. Proudly brought to you by Redbreast. The definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. Join the stillhouse at singlepotstill.com and receive an exclusive whiskey tasting journal.
Let's start off with the week's news. It's brought to you by Glenmorangie. While I'll have more from Mortlach later in this episode, here's what Diageo is announcing today. Essentially, it's the company's biggest single malt launch since the Singleton range 10 years ago and the original debut of the Classic Malts series 25 years ago. The current Mortlach 16-year-old single malt that is available in very small amounts each year as part of the Flora and Fauna range will be going away. In its place, four new permanent Mortlach bottlings to be sold in North America, Northern Europe, the Asia-Pacific region, and in travel retail. Mortlach Rare Old will be the flagship of the range, a no-age statement bottling using a combination of ex-sherry European oak casks, rejuvenated casks, and both first fill and refill ex-bourbon casks. It'll be bottled at 43.4% ABV. There will be a Rare Old Special Strength bottling at 49% as well. It'll be exclusive to the travel retail market. The Mortlach 18-year-old uses first-filled European oak ex-sherry casks, along with refill American and European oak casks, and the 25-year-old version uses a larger percentage of refill American oak casks. Both will be bottled at 43.4% ABV. While there are enough stocks of Mortlach available now to launch the single malt range, Diageo announced generic plans earlier this year to expand the distillery as part of its plan to invest about $1.6 billion in Scotland over the next 5 years to boost whiskey production. I was at the distillery a couple of weeks ago for a sneak preview and talked about the expansion with Diageo Technical Director Graham Stables.
Once the corporate guys decide they want to expand the distillery, tell me what it takes to actually make it happen.
An awful lot of people. We really have to talk to the operational guys, to the Steves and the Seans of this world. There is people in Elgin as well, round about process support. We have a project director as well in tow. And then further on, we talk to the likes of Karen, who we've met here tonight, who's on the innovation side of brands, and also the likes of Dan Hatton, who's on the brands. As well as that, I need to get guys from outside to do the actual architectural work and the structural engineering work and such like as well. And as well as me, I work in engineering in Diageo. On my side, we have mechanical engineers, electrical engineers, instrumentation engineers. So there is a good group of guys.
What went into deciding, and I know you don't have the planning permission in hand yet, what went into the Mortlach expansion to make this project fit into the existing space, make it enhance what you already have, while still keeping the character of Mortlach's spirit?
Well, that was the key in the first place, was that everything was based around about the plant. round about replicating what we actually have there so that we can create the same spirit. So once we've got that and once we know what the layouts are, we've got then able to start looking at spaces and what we want to do on site. So really it was a merger of, you know, what space are we available on site, what do we have on site as far as services, utilities and all that kind of things, couple that together with the requirement for the plant itself and really start from that to create.
And you're managing several distillery expansions right now that are going on around Diageo, but explain what's going into the Mortlach one, essentially duplicating the current distillery, right?
Yeah, duplicating the current distillery. So the guys from engineering that are dealing with the mechanical and the electrical and everything part of it, they are actually immersed in being able to put this together the same way as the existing Mortlach. From my side, the architectural side, it's what do you say, a fresh board there to go and do what we need to do there. So that's the reference to the tie-up with brands and things and to make this building look the part for sitting on Mortlach.
And the current distillery was essentially rebuilt back in the late 60s, but with a design that goes back much, much further. How do you design a modern distillery that ties in and still fits with the Charles Duhigg pagodas and things like that?
I think you've got to look at the elements. Obviously, you know, the time of the Duhigg, as you mentioned, kilns and elements there, that's not really practical these days. I think we've got to just look at modern materials and pick up elements of what there has been in the past there and just try and build them into what we're actually doing.
And what's the timeline for Mortlach? You're hoping to get planning permission by the end of this month, right?
No, we're putting in for planning permission at the end of this month. Okay. So we're preparing our drawings, ready to go in for planning permission at the end of the month. And we would expect to have that hopefully by the end of February next year, 2014. And at that stage, we'd look to start the construction works and the construction elements. And the whole project, including all the commissioning and ramp up, etc., is November 15th.
But you've already going to start knocking down those existing warehouses to get the space ready. You can start the site preparations at least, right?
There is elements we can do. We can't do the whole lot until we've got it clear with planning, but there is elements we can do just now. But no, that's all in the scope is knocking it down from March or there and on.
Part of the overall expansion in Scotland was completed this past week when work wrapped up in the Elgin area at Linkwood and Manachmore. Linkwood received two additional stills and six washbacks to raise its production capacity by 50%, while Manachmore has a new still house with two additional stills, eight washbacks, and another mash tun to double its capacity. Once again, I'll have more on the Mortlach single malt launch in just a few minutes on WhiskeyCast In Depth. Mortlach is not far away from the Macallan, and Edrington announced plans this week to invest $245 million at the distillery. Starting late next year, assuming that planning permission is granted, work will begin on a new distillery at Easter Elkies near the current distillery. That distillery will eventually be mothballed when the new distillery opens, but will be maintained so that it could be reopened if needed in the future. The Macallan will also get a new visitors center as part of the project, which is set for completion in 2017. What could easily have been the third top story of the week came last Monday. The UK's Office of Fair Trading ruled that Diageo's acquisition of White & Mackay as part of its deal for a controlling stake in India's United Spirits would violate competition laws. The ruling declared that adding White & Mackay to Diageo's existing blended Scotch portfolio was likely to reduce competition in the market and raise prices. However, the ruling has been put on hold. Diageo has offered to sell off most of White & Mackay while retaining the Dalmore and Tamnivoolan malt whiskey distilleries. In an email after the announcement, Diageo's Dr. Nick Morgan explained that those two distilleries are needed to supply the United Spirits whiskey business in India and other markets. The OFT is considering Diageo's proposal. A response could easily come after the holidays. One potential buyer for White & Mackay is already stepping forward. The Financial Times reports Vivian Immerman's Vasari private equity firm is prepared to make a bid for the company he sold to United Spirits back in 2007. Vasari has been investing in spirits and beer businesses in Africa and Asia, and a statement from the firm suggests that White & Mackay would mesh well with those interests. Diageo has not commented on any potential buyers for White & Mackay. In other news, the principal at Bardstown High School in Kentucky has been cleared as a suspect in the Pappy Van Winkle theft at Buffalo Trace Distillery. Franklin County Sheriff Pat Melton told the Lexington Herald Leader this week that Chris Pickett is no longer under investigation. Pickett was shown in the surveillance camera video released by Melton's office last month that was shot at a liquor store in Elizabethtown, Kentucky. He was reported to have gone into the store and offered to sell some Pappy to the clerks, but he and his attorneys say Pickett was trying to buy some Pappy, not sell it. Meanwhile, Melton has scheduled a news conference for Monday afternoon in Frankfort to update the public on the case. Check WhiskeyCast.com for the latest on this story as it's available. Now, what's rarer than Pappy and even more expensive? Michter's is releasing a blended Kentucky whiskey that some retailers are planning to sell for about $4,000 a bottle. Michter's Celebration Sour Mash Whiskey was blended by Willie Pratt from casks in the Michter's inventory, with some approaching 30 years old. Only 293 bottles will be available. All have already been spoken for. Other new whiskeys announced this week. A few weeks ago, I had my tasting notes for the Glenfarclas 25-year-old Scotch matured in quarter casks. The distillery officially unveiled it this week, with just 900 bottles available worldwide in what the Grant family says is the last in their series of cognac and port cask bottlings. Glenfarclas used to fill a lot of quarter casks back in the day, but stopped many years ago. This whiskey uses 10 of the last remaining quarter casks at the distillery. We also got a few details on the first two Orphan Barrel whiskeys from Diageo that I mentioned last time around. The rumor mill had Barterhouse 20-year-old and Old Blowhard 26-year-old whiskeys coming from George Dickel, based on looking at label approval applications online. While the two whiskeys will be bottled at Dickel's facility in Tennessee, both are actually Kentucky bourbons from an as-yet-undisclosed distillery. They're set for release in early 2014. Glenlivet's Visitors Center was named Scotland's Best Visitor Attraction of the Year in Visit Scotland's annual Scottish Thistle Awards. The center received a complete makeover last winter and receives about 40,000 visitors annually. And finally, U.S. President Barack Obama issued the traditional Thanksgiving pardons to two turkeys at the White House on Wednesday, while rejecting what seems to be becoming another annual tradition, the plea for clemency from the folks at Wild Turkey. Again this year, Wild Turkey offered to provide a home for the White House turkeys, and again this year, they were sent to a turkey farm in Virginia to live out the rest of their lives. Maybe the distillery would be a better home for the turkeys. It turns out the two White House turkeys pardoned last year didn't even make it to this Thanksgiving. You can keep up with the latest whiskey news all week long at WhiskeyCast.com.
The news is brought to you by Glenmorangie, continuing the Caskmasters project. You've helped us choose the whiskey, and you've helped us choose the name. Next, help us choose the packaging. Sign up online at glenmorangie.com.
Thanks to everyone who's taken part in our 2013 WhiskeyCast community survey so far. If you haven't taken the time yet to answer a few questions about whiskey and WhiskeyCast, we'd appreciate it. You'll find the link to the online survey on our homepage at WhiskeyCast.com. This week's Your Voice is brought to you by Highland Park. Getting more good responses to our hashtag question about age statements on Twitter and Facebook, Wraith Rover posted this three-tweet response. If no age statement is a great idea, how come this wasn't done decades ago? Driven by increased worldwide demand and potential shortages? Those special occasions and moments you do want to reach for an age statement, Talisker Storm doesn't have the same appeal. Suspicion remains that many no-age statement releases are overpriced. Consumers need to be informed more than SWA regulations permit. Well, Wraith Rover is referring to the Scotch whiskey law, which only allows age statements when they refer to the youngest whiskey in a bottle or the year in which it was distilled, and that's the UK's law, not something in any Scotch Whiskey Association regulations. Jim Eaton at jeaton84 tweeted this, "An age statement is just one ingredient in the recipe. Some of my favorites have none. It's all about taste." And while he left out the hashtag, Former Brook Laddie Managing Director Mark Rainier tweeted this response on Age Statements: "You're only as young as the woman you feel?" No word on Mrs. Rainier's response to that tweet. Meanwhile, Gavin Ballas posted this note on our Facebook page, and since it involves a holiday gift, I'm editing it just a bit. Here's what he had to say. "I'm looking to get someone a nice gift this holiday season. The person is a Maker's Mark fan. What are some higher-end bourbons with similar taste profiles?" Well, I suggested Gavin look at the W.L. Weller or Larceny bourbons, since they're weeded bourbons in the same vein as Maker's Mark and have similar taste profiles of a sort. Gavin responded back, "Thanks so much. I love the show. It's the highlight of my weekend." Now, if you have a question, suggestion, or something else you'd like to share with whiskey lovers around the world, you can always post it on the Your Voice page at whiskeycast.com or email me directly. My address is comments@whiskeycast.com, and this week's Your Voice is brought to you by Highland Park.
My name is Daryl Haldane, Global Brand Advocate for Highland Park. Go onto our website at highlandpark.co.uk and upload your photo at Inner Circle to have your face on the walls of the Highland Park Distillery.
Time now for the calendar of events, brought to you as always by Laphroaig. McTeers will hold its final whiskey auction of the year on December 11th in Glasgow. Nichols and Perks will host a Compass Box tasting on December 13th. The Astor Center in New York City will hold one of Robin Robinson's Smackdown tastings, pitting scotches against bourbons that same night. Laphroaig's Simon Brooking will be in Houston for a tasting at Reserve 101 on December 18th. The Scotch Malt Whiskey Society will hold a 30th anniversary tasting at the Vaults in Leith, Scotland on December 20th. After the holidays, the Tromso Whiskey Festival will be on January 11th in Tromso, Norway, and I'll be in Victoria, British Columbia for the annual Victoria Whiskey Festival, January 16th through the 19th. Those are just some of the events on the calendar. It's brought to you by Laphroaig. Take a virtual distillery tour at laphroaig.com. And while you're there, become a friend of Laphroaig and claim your own square foot of Isla.
Whiskey Cast, brought to you by Redbreast, the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. In conversation with Kevin O'Gorman, master of maturation, Redbreast single pot still Irish whiskey.
Redbreast is a drink that I really love on special occasions. I know last year when Cork won the All-Ireland Football Championship in Croke Park, it was a very special occasion, and myself and two of my friends, the first thing we did, we went to a pub in Dublin and we sat down and we had a lovely Redbreast with a drop of water.
Redbreast, the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. Those in the know Redbreast.
This week on Whiskey Cast In Depth, we're going back to our top story of the week, Mortlach's entry into the single malt Scotch market. Before we start, a brief explanation is in order. I was one of a handful of whiskey writers invited to visit Mortlach in mid-November as a guest of Diageo. We were given a sneak preview of the plans for the Mortlach single malts under embargo, along with a chance to taste the four expressions to be released in July of 2014. I've stated this before, and you can review our statement of principles at whiskeycast.com. While I don't like embargoes, I will respect one as long as everyone else under that same embargo does too. But if someone else breaks an embargo, then I'm free to report the story. And speaking of stories, let's get back to the Mortlach story. The whiskey from Mortlach has been prized for decades by blenders for its rich, beefy, and intense flavor. But with a few exceptions, it's rarely been available as a single malt. Part of that is based on the distillery's primary need to supply the blenders, and the rest is based on its limited production capacity, which the current expansion project is intended to resolve. Mortlach is one of the legendary seven stills of Dufton, but rarely opens its doors to visitors. We got a tour of Mortlach and its one-of-a-kind 2.81 times distillation process from not one, but two Mortlach distillery managers. Sean Phillips is the current manager at Mortlach, and Steve McGingle is a former Mortlach manager who now supervises operations at the five Diageo distilleries in the Dufton area, including Mortlach.
So, as you can see, the distillery was founded in 1823 by James Findlater and two partners who opened it and actually licensed the distillery when distillery licensing started in 1823. So the distillery's been on site here since the first official licenses were issued to distillers. George Cowie became involved with the distillery in 1854, and he took sole ownership of the distillery in 1864 when the name changed to George Cowie. His son joined him much later on, and the license changed to George Cowie and Sons, and it has remained as George Cowie and Sons licensees from that day to this. So we still work under the license George Cowie and Sons at Mortlach. Okay. The Cowie family were a local family, so they took ownership of the distillery, as I say, in 1854. And George Cowie handed over to his son in 1897. And that is when the major expansion of the distillery happened, in 1897. It moved from a three-still distillery to a six-still distillery. So they actually duplicated the first three sets of stills and built a new still house. The buildings that you can see here date from the 1960s. So this is a modern upgrade, was done in the late 1960s. So the new distillery that you can see here was built 1960 and went into production in 1968. Okay. The buildings on the right are the original malt barns and malt kilns. Okay. They operated from the time the distillery was built right up until 1968, when the automated maltings at Burghead and Rosyle opened, and the maltings on site closed at that point in time. And malt from Burghead and Rosyle was taken onto site at the distillery here.
It's used for offices now, right?
It's used for offices now, and you can still see part of the malting floors inside, so some of the malting floor still remains, as was part of the kiln. From 1968, we actually took malt in lorries, so 28 tonnes at a time, and stored it in one of the six storage silos that you can see in the back of the building here. So storage on site for almost 150 tonnes of malt, which is almost a week's work, not quite. Okay. Gear, come in. Okay. So what you're going to see here is almost the same as you'll see in any malt distillery throughout Scotland. We've got our malt storage hoppers, we've got a weir upstairs, we've got a destoner, so we pass the malt from the malt bin through a destoner where we remove any pieces of rubble that shouldn't be there, through a weighing machine, and we take it down through the glass window you see above and into a four-roll mill. So the rolls roll grind together, malt passes through and crushes the malted barley and opens up the barley husk. It then passes through the second set of rolls where it releases the starch and some flour from the barley husk, okay? And you'll see behind you what we actually produce coming out of the mill. What we're looking for is the outer shell or the husk of the malted barley, the solid starch, and some fine flour. So from the mill, it passes up through a system of conveyors, and we take it through and store it in a storage hopper in the mash tun. Each mash consists of 12 tonnes of malt, okay? So we grind 12 tonnes through and store it in a storage hopper through. We're processing 16 mashes per week, so it's 192 tonnes per week that we are actually processing at this point in time. Okay, we'll pop through, Sean.
How'd you wind up here?
This is actually my third time here. Yeah, I started straight from school with Arthur Bell and Sons in 1974, joined Scottish Malt Distillers, as it was at that time, in 1978 at Mortlach, and spent 5 years here until 1983. I then came back in 1992 as site manager. Spent 5 years here, moved around a number of other distilleries owned by Diageo, and then I moved back at the start of this year as group manager for the three Dufftown distilleries owned by Diageo. Okay, so ground malt from the mill, stored in the grist storage hopper above us. Yeah, we take it out, convey it out of the storage hopper and into what we call a mashing machine. Yeah, where we mix it with water from number one heating tank. Okay, so the water is mixed at 63.5 degrees centigrade in order to allow the enzyme to start working and convert starch to sugar. Okay, so as we're mashing in, we're converting starch to sugar. And on the bottom of the mash tun, we have a system of false plates, yeah, that allows the liquid to percolate through, but maintains the grist above it. The liquid percolating through removes the starch as it's turning to sugar and takes it off underneath the mash tun and into an underback that you see behind you. Basically, the underback is a balancing vessel so that we do not pull the level in the mash down too quick and pull the grain or the husk down onto the false plates. So we want to maintain filtration as best as we can at all times. So we balance the two vessels together and pump off gradually. Okay, we start pumping the wort off at between 16 and 20 degrees centigrade, and once we've got it settled, we will add yeast to the wort being pumped to one of the washbacks. So once we've got a set temperature and a set level in the washback, we add yeast and the fermentation process starts almost immediately. Okay, now we've added the water on. Still probably not enough water to extract all the sugar that we require, so we actually start to sparge on, or we sprinkle water onto the top of the mash tun, yeah, and we gradually raise the temperature of that water we're adding from 70 degrees centigrade up to about 82 or 83 degrees centigrade. And we gradually increase the temperature as we're adding the water on. That removes the residual sugar, yeah, and we carry some of that forward for fermentation. Once we've got a figure of 54,000 litres in the washback, there is still some residual sugar left in the liquid that we're taking off. So instead of wasting that, we return that back to number one heating tank, yeah, and that becomes the first water of the next mash. Okay? Once we've drained all the liquid off, you will find the outer husk still remains in there, so we discharge that out through a conveying system in the bottom of the mash tun, and that goes to be sold as animal feed or goes to an animal feed processing plant. Okay, the liquid we collect actually collects in one of the washbacks.
And these are old-fashioned wooden washbacks, at least on the outside, right?
These are old-fashioned wooden washbacks. There's no interior at all. They are the Oregon pine, yeah. So that they're all made of Oregon pine. See, this one is just been filled, okay? So this one was filled earlier on today. Yeast has been added to it and the fermentation process has started. If we move further back, we'll see the fermentation process further through as we go through the process. So you can see fermentation underway. We're producing CO2 gas, which produces bubbles, yeah? And it gets to a stage where if we didn't have a switcher blade on the top, the froth would actually come out over the lid of the washback. So fermentation underway, we're actually started producing alcohol at this point in time, and as you can see, we'll have a very vigorous fermentation. Probably better going to the other side, I think, yeah.
Ooh, there we go.
Okay, so a set of metal blades on a motor, turning round, that keeps the froth inside the washback. We leave the liquid in the washbacks at Mortlach for 56 hours, okay? That is long enough to get the alcohol content that we require for the spirit character we produce at Mortlach. So it stays in here for 56 hours, and we then pump it across for distillation. So it's a continual ongoing process. As we fill one, the next one is ready to empty. And a mash lasts about 6 hours. So every 6 hours, we're filling another vessel. And the process continues 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Okay. How many people do you have working on site?
We have, in total, seven shift operators on site. They work
on their own from a control room down in the still house. Okay, so the guys work a day shift, which is 6 in the morning to 2 in the afternoon. They will then work a back shift, which is 2 in the afternoon to 10 at night, and then work a night shift, which is 10 at night or 6 in the morning. So we have 3 on at any one time. Another 2 will be working during that time as well. So one of them will be working 6 to 2 and another working 2 to 10. One man on night shift and 2 on rest days. Yeah. So it's a continual 365 days a year process.
Okay. Except when you're down for silent season, right?
Except when we're down for silent season. Silent seasons are becoming less and less. We used to have a 4-week silent season. This week we were down for just under a week. So we're down for 6 days because we require the production and we can carry out the maintenance an awful lot quicker nowadays than we were able to do it previously. Yeah, you'll probably notice, we'll explain when we get through the still house, the stills used to be welded, yeah, so sections of them were replaced, cut out and had to be welded back together and hammered into position. You'll now see that they're all flanged, so a section is pulled out and a new section is bolted back in again. Yeah, so instead of a replacement copper piece taking between 2 and 3 weeks, we can now do that in less than a day. It was always done in patches, so sections of the still would have been cut out, thin sections of the still would have been cut out, and a new section would have been put in its place, but it had to be welded into position, and then the copper had to be hammered, yeah, and the welds flattened out, yeah. But now we have flanged sections on the sills, so you just undo the bolts, take out the section that you require. A new piece has been prefabricated, it comes on site and is just bolted straight into position.
Is that new industry-wide?
It is happening industry-wide. If you go back to the early stills, you will see that they were all flanged, were bolted, riveted and flanged, yeah? We've basically gone back to what we were doing 100 years ago. Yeah.
So the old ways still work?
The old ways work extremely well, yeah, extremely well.
Steve's turning me over to Sean. Let's go through the still house here. Sean, explain how the still house is set up in here and how it generates the character of the Mortlach spirit.
Right, what we've got here, we've got the wash charges, which the first three stills that you can see next to you here is the wash stills. So you've got wash 3, 2, and 1. And then at the other side, you've got spirit stills 3, 2, 1, and better known as the Wee Witchy as well.
How so?
The way the distillation works, you take wash still 3, and whatever you make on wash still 3 goes into spirit still 3. You then take wash stills 1 and 2, you take your tops from 1 and 2, and that goes into spirit still number 2. You then take your faints and you put that into spirit still 1 along with the towels and the feints of spirit still's previous rum, which is confusing there. Now what we do then is we do that a second time, so that's one dud rum. Then for our second dud run, it's very similar again, is where you take your tops and towels from your 1 and 2 wash stills, you put that into spirit still 1 along with the feints from spirit still 1 after its spirit run, and again we do it twice, which then makes the second dud run ready to do another spirit run in spirit still number 1.
And this is what gives the Mortlach spirit its character, running it through so much of a complex process.
Yes, it is. It is really complex, and that's what the uniqueness is, as well as with worm tubs as well, which we've got out the back. The way we cool the spirit also helps, but it's the actual distillation process is one of the biggest keys.
I want you to explain real quickly this device you're carrying, because we've been hearing the beeps in the background, and I know what it's for, but I want you to explain it.
What we've got here, we've got a gas detector, and it's detecting 4 different levels. The oxygen in the air, it's detecting H2S, which is an eggy smell, which can actually kill you. It's also detecting carbon dioxide, and it's also detecting if there's any explosive materials in the atmosphere. And if it does alarm, we need to stop filming and stop using cameras.
For obvious reasons, because we don't want the place to blow up, right?
We don't want to go with it.
Now, how did you wind up working here?
Good question. Well, I've worked with the company for 27 years. My main background is gin and vodka distillation. I was the master distiller for Gordon's Gin and Tanqueray Gin. And then about 8 years ago, I got the chance to move up to here, where I started off in here for 6 months. Then I went and worked at Glendalen for a year, run Glendalen. And then I went over to Dufftown and managed Dufftown. And the last sort of 3.5 years, I've been back here at Mortlach. So I've moved further and further north in my career.
But while the last few years only having to just commute a little farther, right?
Well, yeah, only a little bit. It's not too far from me. I'm only half an hour's drive from the site here, so it's fantastic.
All three distilleries are basically within a mile or two of each other.
So it was good for me, and it is seen as a move between each of the sites. That's fantastic.
What makes this distillery so unique and so special, besides this unique process for the distillation?
It is the unique distillation, and obviously the way that we as well condense the spirit. It's very hard to describe what the uniqueness is, because people say it's a bit of an oddball distillery because of the way that we do things, but the whiskey that comes, what we make here, is fantastic. It's just got that, with that sulfury, meaty character coming through. Really, really smooth once you drink it.
Where to next?
We're going to come down to the spirit safes, and I have got some glasses out here for you to nose of new make spirit, and I'll take you through them. And we're actually going to go out to the worm tubs.
Unique safe at Mortlach as well, and it's probably the only distillery anywhere in Scotland where you will see adjustable handles on the distillate coming from the wash stills. Okay? Every other distillery will have a wash still running into a set bowl in the safe, but here we separate the strong part of the run and the weak part of the run, and to do that, the stillman monitors the strength of the alcohol, and then we'll come out and shift the handle. Okay? So currently running strong part of the run, they'll move that across and into the weak part of the run. So that's making up the charge for number two spirit still. Once it becomes too weak, you'll move it across into the centre and make the charge up for number one spirit still. What we also should have said is a run from number one spirit still must go into every tanker filling that we put off-site. Okay? We will not allow spirit off-site unless it has a run from number one spirit still in it.
So that's the controlling still?
Yep, that's basically the controlling one. What happens is the two large stills that you can see produce a much lighter green florally spirit. Yeah, the second one will do the same. It'll produce quite a light spirit, but the small one here produces the really heavy sulfury character that we're looking for out of the Mortlach distillation process. So we're looking for that sulfury character coming out of Mortlach, and if we get that sulfury content in the new make spirit, it takes it that bit longer to mature. Yeah, because of the amount of sulphur in it. And we reckon that is what makes Mortlach the spirit that it is. And as you're probably all aware, it is really sought after by blenders right throughout Scotland. Okay? Okay, if you want to take out, we've got a couple of glasses here.
Yep.
I'll let you nose the new make spirit as it comes off the still.
Okay, this is the new make, and
straight off the still.
Yeah.
Whoa!
What you're looking for here is you'll get a sulfury note. Now, when we talk about sulfury notes, is everyone associates different smells with different things. Now, one of the smells that you can get from sulfury is what we call that a gas pipey smell. Yeah, match being struck, okay, so you get that smell coming off, and that's what you're actually smelling here now. That's the new make spirit that we've done earlier on today, but that's the sort of sulfury smell that you get at this stage before going into the cask.
I get that nice little burnt match aroma, just enough to keep it interesting.
Just keep it, yep. And then there's, I mean, I can smell it quite well here at the moment. There's also a meaty sort of smell coming off at the moment, and you can actually smell that there. So that's what we're looking for when we're making New Make Spirit.
Very robust.
Yes. Yep.
We've stepped outside and are going up to the worm tubs located along the back side of the still house.
This is how condensing happened traditionally. Yeah, if you go back into the 17th, it was a wooden tub with a water pipe running into it, a water tub running out of it. These are exactly the same setup. Okay, what we have is cold water coming from the river about a mile upstream, yeah, fed by gravity down through, fed into the bottom of the tub. The cold water rises up through the tub and overflows out through the overflow that you can see probably behind you there somewhere. Okay, you can see this one overflowing here. So the water comes in at the bottom, overflows out the top. The vapour coming off the still after it's been heated comes up over the swan neck of the still and into the lye pipe that comes out through the wall. Yeah, and as the vapour hits the cold water, it starts to condense back to a liquid, okay? And it will run round a tube inside the worm tub here, a copper tube, that decreases in diameter as it goes down the tube. So it's coming in about 14 to 15 inches in diameter. By the time it comes out the bottom, the tube is down to 3 inches in diameter. And the condensing happens basically in the top part of the worm. So the water is taking the vapour back to liquid right at the top part of the worm, yeah? And another part of what makes Mortlach special is that there is very little contact with copper, okay? And that produces the heavier character, sulfury spirit, sulfury meaty spirit that we're looking for coming out of Mortlach. In a traditional condensing unit that you see in a number of sites now, the condensing happens much slower, so the vapour is much further down the tubes before it turns back to liquid. A lot more copper content, therefore a lot lighter spirit. And it is really difficult to produce a heavy, sulfury, meaty character in a condensing tube, yeah? These are great for doing the job that we look for. Worm tubs are definitely a key factor in the production of Mortlach spirit, absolutely no question about it at all. And you'll notice the tubs are all different sizes, yeah? Basically built in size to match the condensing rate of the cells, yeah? So,
you have
six
different tubs?
Six totally different tubs, as are the six stills, yeah?
So Steve, how much do you actually mature here on site in the warehouses here at Mortlach?
We tanker all spirit at this point in time to our central filling store, where it's filled into casks and matured in a central warehouse, yeah? It's mainly at Black Grange near Stirling in the central belt of Scotland, which has warehouse capacity for 6 million casks.
So what do you use the warehouses here for? Just for the occasional cask or for a limited amount?
Yeah, for a limited amount. We always keep the warehouses full, yeah? So if we get a space in the warehouse where we've taken casks out, we will send a tanker to a local distillery where it will be filled into casks. The casks will then be brought back onto site and will be matured on site.
Will those be held for single malt use, or will those be used for blending or for both?
They'll be used for both. We don't differentiate between the warehouses that we keep stock in. It matures pretty evenly wherever it is in Scotland. The casks that we use obviously have a huge impact on the final character. So we use a number of different casks. We use ex-bourbon casks. They can be filled, a refill ex-bourbon, so the bourbon have been put into it first. We will then put it into the cask for the first time. We may then disgorge that once it's matured and then fill it again. So that becomes a first refill, yeah? We will probably use the cask a third time as well. So once that happens, once it's matured, we'll take it out and we'll remove the wood from the inside, a section of the wood from the inside, by flailing the wood off. We'll then burn the cask and that becomes a second refill cask, which we will take back on. Okay? A number of different casks used in the blend that we're making. Yeah, a number of different casks used in the malt that we're making. Yeah, we also use ex-sherry casks from Spain, mainly from Spain, but we'll use American oak that's been filled with sherry as well. So we'll use Spanish oak and we'll use American oak. Those will be filled with sherry. Once the sherry bodegas is finished with the cask, they don't use it again, so we'll take it across and use it to fill whiskey into.
Which one gives the spirit, the character you're looking for, the bourbon casks or the sherry casks?
Both, actually, because it's a mixture of both that we use in the Mortlach, the final one, yeah.
Is there a percentage of sherry to...
There is a set percentage. If I told you that, I would have to kill you.
Yeah, it's okay. Yeah, yeah. It's worth it now.
So we fill a set percentage of sherry casks, Mortlach is filled with. So we will fill some of that into the Mortlach spirit that we sell as a single malt.
So we know that Diageo said earlier this year, or during 2013, that Mortlach is one of the distilleries that's slated for an expansion. Where are you going to put it, given that you've got neighbors on the one side of the road and what looks like a pretty good-sized hill on the other?
We have, yeah. Okay, the new distillery will be built on the site of these duty-free warehouses here. Okay, plans are in place for demolition of these warehouses starting on Monday. So we start demolition on Monday, yeah. We will remove, being the two Scots that we are, we will remove the slates that are on the roof, we will remove all the wood that is inside the warehouse, and we will recycle that. Yeah, we will then look to demolish the exterior walls, probably at the end of December sometime.
Now for the process of turning that whiskey into four different single malts. Dr. Matthew Crowe is part of Diageo's whiskey blending team and was one of the key people responsible for creating the four Mortlach whiskeys.
How did you and the rest of the team take this whiskey that has been prized by your colleagues for decades and say, okay, what do we do with this to make it a single malt?
I think, as is often the case when you're working with a great distillery like Mortlach or Talisker or any of the kind of really, you know, great distilleries, it makes sense quite quickly. You know, you think about how we've used Mortlach in blends, and how the Walkers and how, you know, the blending houses going back to, you know, hundreds of years will have used Mortlach in blends. And you think, well, it's used at different ages, it's used with different wood types, trying to draw out different characters. And if you think about that in terms of the possibility and the options that opens up to you as someone who's going to try and create a single malt from there, it's just, you know, so much opportunity for working with flavor, and that's the most important thing, is just making something that's got a really great, interesting and differentiated flavor to everything else that's out there. And I think with Mortlach, that's absolutely what we've done.
How do you balance out the cask needs for the blenders with the limited inventory that's available for single malts? Mortlach only produces so much a year until the new expansion comes online in a couple of years from now.
That was one of the first. If you imagine it being one of the first ports of call, was to actually balance up all of the stocks and inventory which is there, and to ensure that Walker can continue to make the liquids it can, and then that opportunity with the Mortlach that's left over is where the innovation within the single malt comes from, and then obviously with the expansion plans going forward in a number of years' time, the whole position will be much more balanced. And we'll be able to either do more with the single malts and also continue with the Walker blends as they always have been.
One of the strengths of this whiskey is the heritage, the unique distillation process that we heard about from Steve and Sean. But that process also requires a lot of engineering on the blending side to come up with the four individual single malts that you're releasing under the Mortlach label, the rare old, the special strength rare old version, along with the 18 and the 25. Let's go through the four of those real quickly and explain how you and the team crafted those four single malts that the rest of the world will get to see next July.
Well, starting with the rare old, personally, as long as I've been with the company, the name Mortlach has always been has always been known to me, and the quality of the liquid, working with blends and working as a blender, it's always been you know what you're getting with Mortlach. It's got that, you know, that intensity, but also with a lot of the knowledge and the kind of insights into maturation over the last 20 years or more, but specifically in the last 5 and 10 years, really kind of getting an idea about how you can draw out different characters from Mortlach. Mortlach has this obviously has this incredible complex stillhouse arrangement, and you genuinely can think of it as being like three distilleries in one, just the way everything flows through. So it's almost thinking of the spirit which is taken from Mortlach and filled to cask as almost being a blend in the start, a blend of flavors. So there's all of this flavor tied up in there, and then using maturation to pull those flavors out in different directions. And then with the rare old, we're using different types of wood, we're using different ages to pull these new make flavors and tame them and mold them into single characters, which we can then bring back together in a very kind of structured and organized way, which is very complex, and that's kind of like the key to it. It's sort of like deconstructing Mortlach and then rebuilding it with more structure. And the special strength version of the rare old, as much as anything, it was just this experiments in the lab and really appreciating Mortlach at different strengths. Cask strength Mortlach, which, you know, can be very different from than it would be if it was even diluted down to bottling strength. So we found a lot of inspiration in that kind of differentiation in character, and then off the back of just trying lots of different strengths and lots of different variations, we found that 49% just had this kind of this key kind of tipping point between the sort of like the richness and the European oak tying in with the richness of the rare old, and then this almost kind of move into an American oak kind of character with a bit more vanilla and coconut and sort of like elements of tropical fruit coming into, which we just thought was fantastic, and thought it was a great opportunity to share that. And to really kind of give a different experience for a consumer.
And then the 18 and 25.
The 18 and 25 year old in themselves very interesting, because we went to the stocks and looked at all that was available, and we thought, well, we don't want to have a really kind of over sherried bullish beast of a Mortlach, and it's not really in the feeling of everything we're trying to do. So we wanted to make a really kind of elegant and refined version of the intensity of Mortlach, and the 18-year-old is certainly that balance with the sort of sherry character that we were bringing in there, and the 25-year-old just happened to be within the sort of the selection of casks that were available to us. We found that this these refill American oak, and they're not, you know, it's not second fill, it's probably not even third fill, it's really a number of previous whiskey fills. American oak just gave this really, really refined, very kind of perfumed, soft, but in the same way, very structured and complex version of Mortlach, which we just thought was really great and really surprising. You know, with these really old casks, with the kind of very gentle refill maturation, we just found that these perfumed notes and really kind of light, sweet notes that were coming through were so, you know, atypical to what you maybe would expect from a Mortlach if you've tried any before, which just thought it was fantastic, and it made so much sense with everything else we were doing.
Which one is your favorite?
I really like the rare old. I'm with the work that we've done in there and the kind of the new processes that we've brought to it. I'm really pleased with how it's turned out, and I think it's a whiskey which, it reveals a lot depending on how long you've poured it, how much water you've added, how much you've warmed it in the palm of your hand. If you leave it on the table for a few minutes and then go back to it, it'll have changed from when you first poured it. I just think there's so many levels and there's so much interest within there. I think it's a very modern whiskey from a very, what you might consider to be quite an old-fashioned distillery in Mortlach.
Once again, the four Mortlach single malts won't be released until July of 2014, with the rare old 18 and 25-year-old expressions to be available in Northern Europe, North America, the Asia-Pacific region, and travel retail, while the rare old special strength expression will be a travel retail exclusive. I tasted all four. Let's start off the What I'm Tasting This Week department with the Mortlach Rare Old. As I mentioned earlier, all three of the core expressions are bottled at 43.4% ABV. The Rare Old's nose is vibrant and complex with good spices, a touch of roasted pork with juice, and fruity notes of orange peel, peach pie, and apple cobbler. The taste is spicy and peppery with cinnamon and white pepper notes that fade slowly, orange sauce on pork with brown sugar, and hints of allspice and marzipan. Fruity notes take over the finish with notes of blood orange, peaches, and hints of brown sugar and chocolate. Adding some water expands the fruitiness overall. I'm scoring the Mortlach Rare Old a 94. Now, I won't do notes here for all four of the new Mortlachs. You can find them at whiskeycast.com. But let's look at the 25-year-old version for a moment. The nose is rich and thick on this one with orange oils, dark chocolate, marzipan, cedar shavings, and a touch of cigar humidor with some pipe tobacco. Time brings out papaya and coconut notes, and the orange oils turn to a touch of marmalade. The taste is dense, solid, and firm, with intense cinnamon on the tip of the tongue and notes of orange marmalade, dark chocolate, cedar, and old wet leather. Water brings out some fruitiness and a touch of ashiness, too. The finish is long with fading spices, old leather, fresh mushrooms, and hints of citrus and eucalyptus. I'm scoring the Mortlach 25-year-old a 94. Now, both of these scores are based on samples from early production batches, and I will retaste them when they're released. Let's move on to the 7th edition of Blue Hanger, the blended malt from Berry Brothers and Rudd. It's bottled at 45.6% ABV and is the first edition of Blue Hanger to be available in North America. Doug McIver of Berry Brothers blended this from casks of Boonahaven, Brooklady, and Milton Duff. The nose is spicy and smoky with barbecue sauce, ginger, allspice, and hints of berry cobbler underneath. The taste is also spicy and smoky with black pepper, a slight tanginess with ginger, honey, and hints of citrus and berries. The finish lingers well with a dry smokiness and muted spices. I'm scoring the Blue Hanger's 7th release a 90. I've added these tasting notes to the searchable list of nearly 1,100 different whiskeys at whiskeycast.com. That's also where you'll find WhiskeyCast HD and WhiskeyCast Virtual Tastings episodes, the latest news and the calendar of events, and you can do your holiday shopping in the WhiskeyCast Photo Gallery and our bookstore powered by Amazon.com. You can follow me on Twitter at WhiskeyCast, and my email address for questions and suggestions is comments@WhiskeyCast.com.
WhiskeyCast. Proudly brought to you by Redbreast, the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. Join the stillhouse at singlepotstill.com and receive an exclusive whiskey tasting journal.
WhiskeyCast is a production of Cask Strength Media, copyright 2013, and comes to you each week from the charming, yet regrettably dry town of Haddonfield, New Jersey. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening.